Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. A little later on in the programme, Julian Laron and Gemma Soleil will be here to reflect on a busy weekend in La Liga, including Real Madrid's 3-3 draw against Levante. But we kick things off in the Premier League, which of course is making the effort to follow the trend set by the Euros officiating in the fact that they're trying to let more go this season. Klopp's not happy. It's like we're going 10 to 15 years backwards. If you like that sort of thing, watch wrestling. Solskjaer also not happy, especially after Saints' opening goal. It's a foul. Stephen goes straight through Bruno with his arm and his hip across him. We can't go from one extreme of basketball last season to rugby now. Meanwhile, the PGMOL, of course, in charge of the referee, saying we are very pleased overall with how things have gone over the opening two rounds. The players have also bought into what we are trying to do to let the game flow. Some managers may take time adjusting to it depending on their team's style of play or decisions which have gone against them.
Just nonsense, really, isn't it? I mean, for example, both managers, but Solskjaer's comment about, well, he went through them. And then in the same sentence, he said, well, he went around him.
Right.
His hip and his arm. We've watched it again. It's not a foul. It's not a foul. I mean, if he doesn't play any of the ball, maybe. But as for Klopp and Solskjaer saying it's gone back, listen, they are not reading the room of public opinion. Because everybody's really enjoying the fact that we're not seeing, and we didn't see it in the Euros, these stupid fouls every 30 seconds for minimal contact and players going over.
Yeah.
Referees are saying now, actually, we're just going to let this flow. You're still not allowed to tackle through the back. Mm-hmm. You're still not allowed to two-foot people. You're still not allowed a leg-breaking challenge, but you're allowed a little bit more physicality. So I think these two are barking up the wrong tree.
With your Liverpool goggles on, does he have a point?
Absolutely not. I don't get it at all. Nobody got concussion. I never saw any blood.
Right.
I didn't see physios coming on every 5 minutes.
Nobody gets stretched off.
There's 50-50 challenges. 50-50 challenges. So if somebody's bigger and stronger and wins that challenge, you're not happy. Oh, and guess what? Two teams who we all say should be trying to win the title are not happy that they can't just do what they want and everybody has to stand back and let them pass the ball around without tackling them. Because that's kind of what it smells like and smacks like. And you've got two guys. How many people are watching football around the world? Hundreds of millions, right?
Yeah.
These are the only two people I've heard say anything about the way the game has changed. Every other person has said, this is fantastic. I love the way the referees are refereeing the game now. I'm not shouting and swearing at the TV every 5 minutes because of people just falling to the floor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, these two have got this completely wrong.
I mean, if you're Burnley in Southampton and you're playing these two teams, you have to bring a physicality to try and negate the quality level.
Sure.
It's a bit like when Wenger, for years, whinged and moaned, even before the season started, about having to go to Bolton and play Sam Allardyce. So Sam Allardyce was already in his head because he had a good Bolton side with some talented players there, but they had some big physical boys. And so, you know, we've seen a red. We're going to talk about it later, but we'll discuss the sending off. There was a sending off in the West Ham game, and that was dealt with over physical. Bad challenge, sending off, nobody gets stretchered off. So, that's just a nonsense. I think 99.99% of people are enjoying the fact that every little bit of contact, Dan, is not a referee stopping the game.
What was wrong with United this weekend?
Well, they were just completely the opposite of their opening game against Leeds. But I did say to you, Leeds played into hands.
Right.
Southampton didn't. And also, he changed the side. He brought Matic in and he brought Martial in.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they scored five goals, was it? Was it five? Yeah, they scored five against Leeds. Greenwood played well. Pogba loved playing those passes in behind. And McTominay is the most dynamic player they've got in the middle of the park, not Matic.
Mm-hmm.
So he made the changes and that didn't help. And also, and I know he played two in the opening day, why do you need to play a Fred and a Matic when you're playing Southampton, whose squad has been decimated with injuries, and yet you still feel I've got to give Lindelof and and Maguire this protection of two holding midfielders. When you're playing Southampton, who have just been pilfered the squad, you know, in the transfer window, not good enough.
Definitely team selection.
Overcomplicating things or overthinking things?
Well, listen, teams like Manchester United have got a big squad. Mm-hmm. And for Ollie to keep everybody happy, he has to try and give people time on the field. And he's probably looking at Southampton and saying, right, it's early in the season, maybe not everybody's 100%. I can play Matic and I can play Martial because A, maybe he thinks they're good players, and B, he's going to keep them on his side, and he thinks he can get away with it. And he didn't. And then when you throw in the guys that you rely on, the likes of Maguire, who had a horrible game, then that's when things go wrong. So, selection and individuals not performing.
Of course, on paper, the big game this weekend in the Premier League was Chelsea against Arsenal. Played out pretty much exactly as we thought it was going to. Of course, Lukaku getting his first goal since returning to Chelsea in a 2-0 victory over Arsenal. Very comfortable indeed. And it's the perfect start, isn't it, for Lukaku, Craig? You come in, you get your goal, you hit the ground running, momentum's already building.
Yeah, and you're playing against two particularly weak, well, a weak back line.
Yeah.
Holding and Murray, that's a partnership and a half, is
yes,
it not?
Yeah. I'm telling also you. Quite a few injuries, isn't it, they were saying.
That's not the reason. I mean, I actually thought some of Lukaku's hold-up play was pretty poor
right
during the game, but then he's just such a big physical goal threat.
Yeah.
And I think once he gets up to speed, I mean, I think in the second half, some of his touches, it was getting under his feet, but he should have had another goal. It was a great save from Leno.
Yes.
In the second half from the header, but he's off to a flying start. He's got his goal to get him underway, but boy, you know, that's no surprise. The big thing is Arsenal.
Yeah, the night's already out for Arteta, but yeah. you look at this 11.
Well, I tell you what, do anything. Yeah, but they've spent more than anybody else.
It's not Arteta's fault, is it?
No.
Like, you spend 50 million on a defender, what, 30 million on a goalkeeper? You bring in Odegaard.
No, listen, for sure, this club has been regressing for a long time. There's no doubt about it. And there's been a lot of dead wood, some of it gone and some of it still there. However, I personally believe we have a manager here out of his depth.
Right.
Completely out of his depth, I think. And you're cutting your teeth at one of the most difficult jobs in England, right? That's the bottom line. He's cutting his teeth at a poison chalice at the moment. So I think that requires a lot more managerial nous, and I don't think he has it. He's certainly not got the experience.
I think that's a little harsh to say he's out of his depth. You know, because when he came in, he still had a bunch of average players, but he got a tune out of them and they won the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he has some sort of skills. But at the end of the day, if you've got... I mean, you look at that, you showed us the Chelsea side and then you showed us the Arsenal side. I mean, look at three of that back four. They wouldn't get near anybody else's team.
Yeah.
You got Pepe, who you just don't know what you're going to get. Saka's not 100% fit. You've got a kid, Martinelli, up front, who's still learning his trade, as is Smith Rowe. You've got Xhaka, who they probably wouldn't be on. You know, they tried to get rid of him. They were ready to offload him. So how's he going to be the guy that's holding it all together? And again, you've got a kid in Lokonga. So, really, is this all down to Arteta? Sorry. If you've got players that are not good enough to play against the opposition that they're against, then you can't completely blame it all on the manager.
But my point, I don't disagree. I just think, you know, being Guardiola's assistant isn't a reason to be managing one of England's big clubs, albeit not best teams. The one thing I would say is that at one point when he came in, he was lauded for the way that he shuffled things around.
Yeah, and like dumping Guendouzi, there was a lot of people saying Gurdy's standing up.
And Maitland-Niles, where he played him at certain times and how he tried to take some of the Man City stuff. But I don't know what's happened because he sat on his backside and watched Chelsea completely smash him down the right-hand side and he didn't do anything about it.
Right.
I mean, at least, you know, if you're struggling, do something. Don't just do nothing. I mean, put Tierney back as a left-sided centre-back, change the shape, match up, do something. He didn't do anything, so he thought just doing the same thing poorly would work, and it did. But That club's
rotten. Let me tell you something, Greg. I once managed a team.
And
I never used to change it a lot. And people used to say to me, why are you not changing this?
Right.
And what I couldn't tell them was, you know what? If I do change it, I'm going to be worse than what I've got now already.
Right.
That's probably what
I'm thinking.
And
now you're here with us.
And now I'm here with you. That kind of might be some sort of thing in his head, though.
Right.
Because although he goes, OK, I can make it three, but then the problem is I'm going to have to put this guy there and it's going to be even worse. So
it couldn't have been much worse because they were just getting absolutely battered.
Just a word on Chelsea, who are loving life at the moment, aren't they? That must be nice when you're in that sort of flow amongst the squad. You feel like you're going to win every game when you step out onto the pitch.
And they're still able to give rest time to people like N'Golo Kante and others. And you know, Reece James is flourishing. There's clear instruction from Tuchel about what he wants. That's been obvious from the get-go when he came in. And now they have, I wouldn't say it's the final piece because it's not a perfect squad, but now they have a physicality up front.
Yeah.
Lukaku.
You know, I was watching Havertz and I started thinking about Bobby Firmino.
Right.
Because I get the feeling now...
Back to Liverpool.
No. I get the feeling now where... The pressure is completely, it seems to me, off Havertz as far as scoring goals. But this guy's everywhere knitting everything together. Now you've got Lukaku. Aye. You've got Lukaku, who's the main focus for putting the ball in the net. And you've got Havertz floating around, knocking little passes and taking advantage of people that are out of position.
Is it too much of a sweeping statement to say it will be Chelsea or City that will win the title?
Yeah. Yeah, because I do think...
No, you mean no.
Sorry?
You mean no?
Well, let's see what he's going to say.
No, he said yes.
Well,
you haven't
heard the answer yet.
Hold on, what about yes? Yes was yes was the correct answer.
When you watch it back again, you know what I meant.
Listen, nobody can get in your head. Because Liverpool have got a chance.
Right.
I don't think United have for obvious reasons. I'm still in the case. I still think if they had one of the other managers of those three teams that we think will be in the title race,
right.
I think they would be, but I don't think they will be with this manager.
Yeah.
That's quite simple.
There we go. Stevie brings up Liverpool, Craig brings up Ole. Standard. Let's just remind you, Arsenal's start to the season has left them 19th in the table.
They've only got City to play.
Yeah, Manchester City is who they face next weekend.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, focusing on Spain, after match day 2 of La Liga, both Barcelona and Real Madrid dropping points. We'll discuss that further. Julian Laron and Gemma Soler. Let's start, shall we, with that 2-2 draw, 3-3 draw between Levante and Real Madrid. Crazy is how Carlo Ancelotti summed it up, not happy with his defence afterwards, saying, "We have to improve our defensive attitude. Defensive commitment is not about quality. It's about sacrificing yourself, and that is something that depends on everyone. For the second goal, we were 3-2. That can't happen." Craig, when you take a look at that front three, obviously Hazard, Benzema and Gareth Bale, is that the concern defensively in the fact you've got those three luxury players not tracking back, that leave you exposed? Is that the problem here?
I mean, against the better sides... It shouldn't be a major drama against a side that finished 14th last year.
Right.
I mean, a decent side, Levante, don't get me wrong. But I think in terms of going forward, they're a worry. Bale got himself a goal. Benzema's not a concern. Bale got himself a goal after a Benzema assist. But once again, Eden Hazard.
He was nowhere.
I mean, during the game, you're watching Isco go past people, dropping his shoulder, change of pace. I'm not seeing him go past people, and it wasn't until Ancelotti went to his bench and brought the younger, quicker guys on, like Vinicius Jr., that they showed a bit of pace about the side. And that's a concern as well. But I said last week, Militao and Nacho too are a concern at the back, and that showed.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Like, there was that real vulnerability about the back line, Jules, of Real Madrid, which Ancelotti clearly frustrated about.
Yes, and rightly so. I think they were not aggressive enough. Certainly, there was no protection enough of the back four. And we could talk about Isco being there in that midfield three. There was no Kroos, no Modric. But it's true that in terms of defensive ability as a midfielder, this is not what he does. This is not what he's good at. So I think maybe Casemiro was a little bit too much on his own in front of the back four. And then we talked about it all summer, though. But when you lose Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane as your two centre-backs, you lose not just two great players, but also a lot of leadership. And I do think that at times they lacked leaders at the back against Levante. And also, I think Lucas Vázquez is not right back, and we saw it last season. And again, the Campania goal, which is an amazing finish, but Lucas Vázquez is not in the right place at the right time. And I do think that cost you as well.
As Craig says, it made a big difference when Vinicius Jr. was brought on. The front page of Marca very much saluting Real Madrid's youngster, saying a great Vinicius and not much more. Coming off the bench once again to score this weekend, as he did in the opener against Alaves. Ancelotti after the game saying it's clear he wins a starting spot like this with 3 goals in 2 games. I have a very good squad. We have to think a bit differently. 5 of the players who start a game won't finish it. What's important isn't starting a game, but deciding it. Maybe he will start the next game. Today, Vinicius has decided the game with his freshness and ability. Gemma, Vinicius, from a Real Madrid perspective, has been a frustrating figure, certainly in front of goal in the past, getting himself in good positions, but not being able to execute the finish. Boy, he was excellent, wasn't he, in the second half of the weekend. Mm.
Yeah, he was definitely, he saved 1 point for Real Madrid. But, you know, he's very young, he's 21, and he arrived in Madrid, like, they told us he was this big, big star ready to shine, and he was not yet. He's been working his definition, trying to be more precise on one shot in the kickoff. So we have to see what's happening with this player. There is right now a huge campaign in Madrid with Real Madrid fans to make him starting next game. Again, a lot of criticism against Gareth Bale, against Eden Hazard. But is Vinicius Jr. the solution? We don't know. I think he's not done that much really well to make this the reference in the attack next to Karim Benzema for the Real Madrid squad. And according to the game, for me, he was so frustrated, Carlo Ancelotti, because of the lack of defensive, of commitment of his players. And I think that was the key for not being able to win that game at the Ciutat de Valencia against a team that they like to play. Sometimes are quite kamikaze, so this means they will give some space to youngsters, to very fast players like Vinicius starting from the bench.
What do you do with Hazard, Stevie? Like, Vinicius has to start over Hazard from what we've seen these 2 games. It's not even a debate.
Well, I think if you look into the statement that he made, he's basically saying, yes, most people would start somebody who's done what he's done over the last 2 games, but it's not always about starting the game. That's telling you that he's not ready to start them. So he's going to give Hazard a period of time. No question.
But Stevie, there's nothing.
That's what's going to happen. He's just come in. Everybody's been talking about how he's going to put an arm around Gareth Bale, how he's going to look after them, how he deals with the players. And when you do that, you have to give players a period of time, whether it's so many games or whatever. And then you have to make a decision. And right now, I don't think Ancelotti's ready to not start Hazard.
Are you not in danger then of kind of pulling the plug on the momentum that Vinicius is building up?
Well, no, because clearly not starting the game isn't hurting him, because he's coming on and he's producing. And that means his head's in the right place to come off the bench and not be sulking and not thinking, well, I should be starting. He's actually got a positive attitude. So coming off the bench right now, he's focused. He's not sulking. So I think right now he can still get away with starting Hazard and bringing Vinicius on.
The only one of that front three, in my opinion, that really cares about the outcome of a season or the outcome of what happens to Ancelotti or what happens to Real Madrid is Benzema.
Mm-hmm. Can you change that if you're Ancelotti?
No, I think subconsciously Hazard and Bale in particular, whilst you might get the odd tune out of them, win or lose, you know, let's be honest with Gareth Bale, win or lose, he goes home. It's not, yeah. What does it mean?
Yeah.
Is he bothered that much about Real Madrid if they finish second or third? No. I actually think Benzema still has a bit of drive in him.
Sure.
And that's why he does it every year and the manner in which he does. But the other two, I think, just kind of coast. And that's what we saw again at the weekend, particularly from Eden Hazard. I mean, Gareth Bale was a squad player at Tottenham last year, right? You know, you can talk about, well, that was Mourinho, but he never did anything to...
No.
He didn't do anything to really push his way in and say to Mourinho, listen, you've got to get me in the field. So what he has here is a couple of luxury players that are what they are, and then you're relying on Benzema. But let's go back to the defending. It wasn't a problem for them in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
They were controlling the game. But as soon as they lost a little bit of control, then they lost their shape and lost their composure. That's when it was a worry. And as I say, they've played two teams so far that finished in the bottom half of La Liga last year, and they have not looked convincing.
You've got to ask yourself, why is Alaba playing left back?
Right.
Yep.
I mean, he is so far ahead of Nacho and Militao.
But you've got Mendy's injured, isn't he? So I suppose it's just a case
of personnel.
So you've got Marcelo out, you've got Mendy out.
You keep your core strong right through the pipe. You do. If you're going to weaken yourself, don't weaken yourself right in the middle of the defence, because you can get away with somebody who's not particularly doing great fullback, because your two centre-backs are going to cover for him and clear up the mess. You don't expose yourself like that. I'm sorry. A lot of that's down to himself.
So, Real Madrid dropping points. Barcelona as well, Gemma. And what I thought was striking in this game, after what we saw from Griezmann in the first match at the Camp Nou, he was a little bit on that Eden Hazard kind of side of things, did very little to impact this game. And this is the sort of match you think, right, Lionel Messi is gone. You need some sort of contribution from Griezmann. But he went missing for much of this match.
Yeah, there is very much frustration amongst Barcelona supporters, because they expected much more for Griezmann, because he always said that, of course, Messi played in his better position, but it's been two games now and Griezmann has done anything at all, especially in Bilbao, in La Catedral. He was completely lost. There was a lack of leadership in that team, that only there was only one moment that when this happened. It was after the minute 70 when Atletico Bilbao, they were a little bit tired, so they downed this height, amazing pressure. And then the leaders were Frenkie de Jong and Memphis Depay, a player who has just arrived. There was no sign of Griezmann. You know, he spoke to the press after the game and he said something like, well, I play where the coach made me play, but it's not enough because he's got freedom now. There is not a Lionel Messi where the all playing attack has to go the ball there. So they are expecting much more from the player who is the best paid right now in the Barcelona locker room.
Would you like to defend your boy, Jules?
Defend my boy, you know that. It was a bad game for him. I think it was a bad game for Barcelona as a whole. I mean, defensively, Piqué and Eric Garcia, even in midfield. I mean, poor Pedri, thank God that they finally sent him on holidays, because they took him off early. I mean, at some point, the kid cannot play anymore. He's played like 200 games in the season or something. It's ridiculous. And I do think that this team has to perform in midfield. And when De Jong is not on a great day, and Pedri either, and then the ball, apart from Memphis, not much happened to it or with it from Griezmann and other people. I think it's really difficult. I think they got really lucky with 1 point, and they can be very happy with that, because it was not a good performance at all overall, and Griezmann especially.
Gemma, I just wanted to know what they were saying in Barcelona about the disallowed goal just before half time. Barcelona didn't do much in the first half, but we've seen this so many times. And is the referee blowing for a foul against Braithwaite?
Yeah. Well, of course, in Barcelona, they are complaining so much because it's a kind of action we've seen many times. Mm. And probably if this action was in the defensive area, with a defendant, that wouldn't be a fault. So yeah. Why for a forward it is a fault? It's like a different kind of law. And of course, it's very frustrating because Araujo managed to make that crazy goal and it couldn't go to the score. So there is quite a lot of frustration here, especially De Jong was really, really mad with with Martinez Munera, the referee, and Ronald Koeman at the end of the game was really very upset.
Now, this is where, that's where they think the foul occurred. It's strange, Gemma. Like we've seen it, and you've seen it, and Stevie, we watched this game a lot.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. The defender makes no attempt to go for the ball. Braithwaite has his eye on the ball, makes his leap, and the defender just stands there. I mean, there's nothing about it as a free kick.
It's a bit of a head scratcher. Maybe not as much, though, as the game, as the goal that Valencia were awarded from the penalty spot. Craig, what did you make of this against Granada? This is late on.
So, the attacking player actually kicks. There's no challenge, put it that way, watch.
He kicks the ground himself there.
Yeah.
But he actually kicks, he touches the foot of the, he kicks the foot of the defender as well.
Yes,
and so the ground.
And the ground, so the defender does nothing, right?
Yeah, fortunately there's somebody sat in a room somewhere that can put right the wrongs.
Well, they didn't put right the wrongs, Gemma. How on earth have any sort of refereeing committee defended this in Spain?
Well, you know, the referee is like a crazy world here in Spain, and we have many different rules. It depends on the referee, and they don't explain themselves. I know Gaillet's he's very smart here. He takes the ball, he does the performance perfect. And you know, it's the only mistake that Granada did in that game, so it's quite unfair for them. But the referee saw some kind of touching there, and it's a penalty for him.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, for a lot more on what happened in La Liga, plus the rest of the big talking points from the weekend, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Unacceptable. That's the front page of L'Équipe after the Nice-Marseille match was suspended at the weekend. This all started after a bottle was thrown at Dimitri Payet. He would then get up and throw said bottle back into the crowd. That would then spark a massive furore, fans coming onto the pitch. From there, Marseille said, look, we don't feel safe to come back and play the rest of this game. As a result, it is Marseille then who will forfeit the match, with Nice getting all 3 points. Jules is back with us. I suppose the most obvious question, Jules, is why is Marseille being punished for Nice's fans doing what they did?
That's right, Dan, and this is the whole question in France right now. So they will both go in front of the discipline committee during the week, and that might well change. Nice could be docked points, for example, and I don't think Marseille will win the game. But things might still change, because the precedent that the game was set by the league is that it shows that if you're fans attack the players of another team when you 1-0 up and you can still and invade the pitch and yet you can somehow still win that game, then what's next? Next is someone will be 1-0 up against PSG or Monaco or Lyon or whatever, and then their fans will invade the pitch, attack the opposition, and then go back, and then there won't be no safety for the opposition. They won't come back like Marseille didn't want to come back, and then they would lose the game. So it's a very, very dangerous precedent set by the league, who agreed for the game to be resumed because the local authorities and the police said that the game should resume. But it was crazy, really. The game should have been stopped and not restarted at all, not with the referee and the Nice players putting the ball on the corner flag, like if Payet would come out of the dressing room and take it, because we knew that the Marseille players were in the shower on their way back home. So it was just crazy, and really, really, I think a lot of work has to be done now, not just for this not to be repeated, but also to take the right measures and sanctions for both Marseille and Nice, because it's not just the Nice fans. I think some of the Marseille players and staff are also to blame for the chaos, but the right sanctions have to be taken now.
Was it interesting enough, Jules, was that, I don't know if you know, was that a glass bottle that was thrown on at Dimitri Payet?
No, it was a plastic bottle without the lid. You know, they take the lids off, but still, if it's full of water or juice or whatever, and you throw it so close, it can still hurt. And we saw the photos of Payet back with the red mark of it. We saw Luan Perez, the defender, who had a big mark on his neck as well, and Matteo Guendouzi too. The thing is, those ultras from Nice used to be before higher up on the high stand, if you want, of the Allianz Riviera. And somehow now, after the pandemic, they restructured all the tickets location and everything, and those ultras now are really, really close to the pitch, which meant that when Payet took the corner, and not just on the incident, but even before that, they were so close that they could easily throw anything at him. They would have touched him, they would have hit him, and it was just a matter of time before that happened through the whole game, because they were at it, well, the second half, once Marseille attacked that way, it was always going to happen at some point. And it's crazy that the referee didn't do anything before the incident in the 75th minute.
Here's the problem, and I don't know where everybody else stands on this. Here's the problem. One of the problems I've got with these incidents is that, as angry as you are, I don't think you can be throwing stuff back into the crowd. I don't, as a player. Because there are, it's not just guys. How do you don't know what it could be?
Yeah.
You know, kids, youngsters, whatever. And I know it's difficult. It's a bit like when Eric Dier got rushed into the crowd at Tottenham.
Yeah.
At one point at the end of the game. Can't do it. I just don't think... I think as difficult as the situation is, I don't think a player should be throwing objects back into your crowd. Even if you think that portion of the crowd are idiots.
Does this not then spark the conversation, though, that wouldn't have been had if he hadn't have done it? In that this would have just continued, players would have things thrown at them and it could have got even worse.
Well, that's up to the officials to take them off the field. But I think as a player, you at no point should be interacting physically with the crowd.
Right.
I just don't.
Okay.
I think you have to be above that. And I know it's difficult.
Yeah, that's like it seemed like a red miss moment almost from.
And I know it's difficult.
As players, there are certain unwritten rules that we know.
Right.
The Eric Cantona situation, we know that regardless of the abuse that anybody gives us, we are not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And nobody's told us we're not.
Right.
It's just one of those unwritten rules.
Right.
And that's exactly the same thing with Payet. Now,
but Cantona hadn't been hit by anything.
It doesn't matter.
I'm just trying to, we're almost putting a human element into this. And I understand as professionals, you're saying, look, you need to be above that. What happens on the pitch is different to what happens in the stands and when it crosses over.
It's no different.
Right.
Somebody's standing abusing you, calling you all kinds of names, pulling out your family, your mother, whatever it may be, isn't that much different, in my opinion, to getting hit by a plastic bottle in the back, right?
Really? No. But I don't know, Steve.
Payet has to be taken to task for what he did.
Right.
But Marseille as a club and the team shouldn't be getting blamed for this at all. How they can come straight out and start putting blame on Marseille and the players is absolutely nonsense.
But we're talking about being called names and then being hit. That's surely two different things, isn't it, with regards to human instinct to react?
Listen, as I said, there are certain things that we know we cannot do, regardless of what happens to you. You cannot do it.
you get hit by things, you can just...
No, you can't throw anything... You cannot throw anything back into a crowd, whether you're upset about it or whether you're frustrated and angry. You can't... You should not, as a professional right. player... The boundaries are, right, you have to let the authorities deal with it, as frustrating as it is. And your first reaction is, I want to jump in the crowd, I want to punch somebody.
Right.
I want to throw that back in. Trust me, you can't cross that boundary, because next week when somebody throws a coin on, or whatever it is, whatever league, and somebody throws something on, a player can't just pick it up and lob it back in.
Right. I remember Jamie Carragher, do you remember he did that for Liverpool?
Right. We make decisions at the highest level. We make decisions like that, and during a game. And if a player walks over to you and smashes you in the face...
That's different, isn't it?
But it's not different.
It is different,
You make
Stevie.
A conscious decision not to turn round and smash him back. You make that conscious decision at the time like that. You know that he's going to get sent off.
Right.
And you know that you can't stand up and smash him back in the face. You make that decision. Now, Payet has had time to make the decision. The first reaction is, if somebody punches you in the face, I want to punch him in the face, right? But you have a time period, and he had plenty to go from, I'm just going to chuck this to, hold on a minute, I know I'm not supposed to do this. He chose not to make that decision. His decision was to throw it, and we know that we cannot and are not allowed or supposed to do that.
But then you can't have the breach of the perimeter of the fence by all these Nice fans in.
Yeah.
You just can't have it. So it's wrong in every level. There's nobody right here.
Right.
There's nobody right. And you know, to have that amount of fans on the field as well is just a huge breach of security. Because I always say, and particularly with some of these supporters who are clearly idiots, right? So you're dealing with idiots to start with, is that once they're on the perimeter of the field and they're already throwing things, what else have they got in their possession?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, that's what I'm saying. That's frustration from Payet. You know, but this scene here, you can't have this. So there has to be huge repercussions for this, because we're now talking about the safety of everybody. You've got Jorge Sampaio absolutely losing it here as well. The whole thing is out of control. And unfortunately, I don't know what the French Federation are going to do about it, but they're going to have to come. Ligue 1 are going to have to come down on this with an absolute, like a ton of bricks.
Sure, sure.
They're just going to have to smash everybody involved here. I don't care. I don't think anybody cares about points. It's really not that important, is it? We're talking about safety here, which is a big issue.
Jules, what's the conversation been like over the last 24 hours in France around this?
It's been crazy, and it's been sadness really, because the hype was so good with Messi arrival and the season has started so well with some great games, loads of goals, etc. And this on a Sunday night, which is the biggest game we had in the weekend, and it's a big rivalry, and it's always quite heated between them two. They really hate each other, but we've never had that kind of chaos really. So sadness more than anything else. Like you said, the front page of L'Equipe, I think, says it all. What we know as well is that stand where the ultras invaded the pitch would be closed off for at least 4 games, which is the beginning, I guess, of the sanctioning of the Nice side of things. We also saw a staff member of Jorge Sampaoli, the Marseille manager, coming and punching one of the Nice fans and then tracking back. And we saw, so from Marseille, there was also an altercation in the stands between the Marseille president and the wife of the Nice president, which really exploded everywhere on that pitch. So we, like we said, they will both go in front of the discipline commission, and then we will see. But I think you could get heavy punishment for really both clubs. Nice now trying to put the blame on Marseille, and the fact that their players, like the boys have been explaining, provoked the ultras, and that's why the ultras invaded the pitch. If Payet doesn't throw the bottle back, that's what Nice is saying, the ultras don't come on the pitch. But again, I mean, in the first place, and it's not just at that moment, even at warm-up, when Steve Mandanda was warming up on that side, they were throwing all sorts at him, and he already complained to the referee and the delegates of the game, saying, this is dangerous. They're throwing everything at me, and they didn't do anything, not even a warning through the stadium speaker or anything like this. So even the referee have to look at themselves in the mirror now and saying, okay, did we do everything we really could have done to avoid this? I don't think so. So I think there will be a lot more people to blame than just Nice or Marseille or even both of them.
Have ex-pros in France share the same sentiment as the boys, so Jules, in that Payet kind of crossed an unwritten line?
Yeah, it is the same debate, of course, and a lot of the pundits here in France are saying the same as the boys. You have almost a duty of taking on yourself to not react, not answer the provocation, or not go and do something like this that would really make everything kick off. And we still remember the Patrice Evra incident, who, with his own fan, this time he was went and provoked his own ultras, who then came, and that chaos in that Europa League game against Guimaraes a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. And of course, that's the debate. But you can also see from Payet's point of view, where all game, or certainly all that second half, and again, I think it's important to stress again that even before the incident itself, 10, 15 minutes before, they threw everything at him and he was lucky to avoid it. And he could have been seriously hurt. In the end, it's a bottle on the back and it's not going to harm him at all. But it could have been worse. What happens if something hits him on the head, or it's a cone, or it's a lighter, I don't know, anything. So the debate is well open in France too.
Just a reminder, a lot more from Jules on the latest edition.
Well, not a lot.
Well, that's true.
A little bit.
Jules is a bit part player in the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, but he looks good, doesn't he? And I think that was a free jersey you got, of course. Be sure to check that out, available to listen
to
now.
Well, you wouldn't buy it, would you?
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Two wins out of two for West Ham then to kick off the season after beating Leicester convincingly by 4-1. West Ham aided, of course, in that task with Oozie Perez getting sent off just before the break, Craig. And it was something you brought up earlier, of course, the fact that if you're going to make these sort of challenges and VAR will reflect on them, then that's good. That's where you want the officials to step in.
Yeah, Leicester were not up to speed in this game anyway. I mean, it was not ideal going down to 10 men. But yeah, in a weekend where Klopp and Solskjaer have moaned about the physicality, which we think is ridiculous. Mm. You know, the proper challenges that need dealt with are generally getting dealt with. And this was a dangerous challenge from Oozie Perez. And so the only surprise was that Michael Oliver didn't see it live. He had to be told by the VAR, but that's why it's there.
West Ham looking good, Stevie.
Do you know, you don't want to play against them. They're a big, strong team. You know, it's particularly set pieces.
Yeah.
They've got so much height and strength. And then, of course, you've got Mikel Antonio, who, on his day, just seems unplayable at times. And he was unplayable at times in this game. So, yeah, West Ham absolutely are, they're where they are on merit.
And Benrahma getting some game time because Lingard's gone back to Man United. Yeah. So it's a platform for him. He's a kind of luxury player. But if he can feed Antonio, who, as Stevie said, is a handful. And then you've got, like, say, Suchek from the middle of the park. Again, looks a threat, getting into the box and, from set pieces. Very dangerous, so good side.
Yeah, solid team. Boys, as always, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Till then, goodbye. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig's here. Steve got his belt on this morning.
Oh, don't need a belt.
Why do you need a belt? Keep your trousers up.
His tie's matching the...
You haven't seen my trousers and my ankles today, have you?
Thank goodness. Yeah.
And the matching tie for the Extra Time graphics.
Oh, right? Yeah, look at you, Steve. Yeah. Where does Extra Time stop and the tie begins? Jules is with us as well. But the first question is for Craig. Oh. Who do you think will get the best of the other this weekend? Lukaku against Van Dijk. Liverpool-Chelsea on Saturday. What a cracker that should be.
Oh, it's a good battle, that.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh. 50-50.
50-50.
Jet in the fence.
Stephen?
I'm going with Mr. Van Dijk.
Of course you are.
Of course. Well, because he's got some brains.
Right.
Are you suggesting Lukaku's got no brains?
I'll tell you who doesn't. Mari from Arsenal.
Right.
You know, the one thing you can't do with Lukaku is have a fight with him.
Okay.
Because he's too big.
Yeah.
So what did Mari do?
Yes.
Try to have a fight with him when he ended up with
Van Dijk won't fight him?
No, he'll use his brains.
Right. This won't come back to bite you, will it, at all?
No, he'll step off when he needs to. He'll be tight when he needs to. You name it.
After seeing Mikel Antonio's celebration today, what was the best celebration you've ever seen or have done yourself? This is Mikel Antonio seeing a cardboard cutout of himself in the crowd. Full-size one. Picked it up and kissed it right on the lips. What a celebration that is. Stevie, best celebration you've seen?
We played Chicago Fire.
Yep.
In Chicago. And of course, before the game, they've got all these fire machines and everything.
Okay.
Anyway.
What do these fire machines look like? They're just, what, pyrotechnics? Well, fireworks?
No, it's actual flames coming out.
A fire machine?
I'll tell you what, in a midweek game, it looks fantastic.
Oh.
And it's dark and all that. Anyway, so Clint,
yes.
as he did quite a lot.
Clint Dempsey.
Scores a goal in Chicago.
Yes.
Runs over to the Chicago fans and starts rolling with a blanket as if he's putting a fire out.
Oh.
Aye.
Hey.
The other one he did actually was in DC, I think. Oh no, was it Kansas? We're in a baseball park.
Okay.
And he scored a goal, surprise, surprise.
Home run?
And he ran over to the corner where they hit where the bases was and gave it one of them.
Beautiful.
Home run.
Yeah.
Aye, pretty good.
Nice.
Clint came up with some decent ones, huh?
Craig, best celebration you saw? What springs to mind?
Can't remember. Apart from the one I saw, which I wasn't involved in, was it Sid Lowe used to tweet? The one that sort of the guy to get in the car?
No, I don't remember. Oh, the car they could have won, was it? Or it was parked there? I can't remember.
Parked here?
Yeah.
Jump to Holdings.
Yeah.
Advertising Holdings and get in the car.
Ah.
Oh. I'm
surprised you're paying attention that much to these things. Oh. Jules, best goal celebration you've seen?
I saw one in Brazil a few years ago where, you know, sometimes in Brazil the tunnels come out from almost by the goal behind the advertising board, and the guy scored and then jumped over the advert board like you usually do to go and celebrate with the fans, except that the tunnel was behind, and there's actually a teammate that said, no, don't do it, and then you see him jumping and then he disappears, straight into the tunnel, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. There's a couple of them where they've jumped and...
Oh, straight down?
Straight down.
All right, like a mort.
Exactly.
And go...
Yeah. Craig, how important is networking to improve yourself professionally and make yourself more competitive in the job market? Arteta has done a wonderful job at this and should be a case study given what he's achieved for being Pep's mate.
Networking?
That's almost down to you, Steve. You're like, MLS obviously so much success at the Revs. Do you think if you were a networker, you would have gone on and got more work?
Job.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's not in your... PowerPoint presentations, you know, smoozing.
Oh, absolutely, aye. No, it's...
Part of the job?
Yeah. I guess it doesn't matter what industry you're in.
Yes.
When you do that, then yes, the you'll get more opportunities.
Yeah.
And if you don't, like me, you won't.
The world is full of networkers, as we know.
Yes.
We all know who the networkers are. Everybody at their own business, whatever business that is, generally knows who the networkers are because they stick out like a sore thumb. Now, they don't think they stick out like a sore thumb, but they do.
Stevie's right, it's all industries, isn't it? Everyone who goes to work tomorrow will know who that person is.
Yeah. Somebody's always with the bosses, always networking.
Yes.
Always, usually disingenuous when they're talking to you because they don't really mean it because they're thinking about something.
Yeah.
World's full of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if Arteta's... Listen, I don't know if he networked. I mean, networked. He applied for a job.
Yes.
Or they approached them, whatever. I don't know, just because he was... Look, he was coaching at Man City, and they looked at that and thought, former player. See, this is what I don't get, this former player thing.
Right. Former Arsenal player.
Former Arsenal player. Yeah. Former Arsenal player. Coaching with Guardiola. Must be picking up all these great things. It's kind of how they've thought about it.
Yeah.
Young. I'm going to give him time. I don't know if that's networking or not.
Jules, how's your networking skills? You're everywhere. It must be good.
It is good, but I think sometimes you don't even have to do it. Look at Solskjaer, who just by having played with some of the pundits in England, yeah, who clearly didn't want to criticise him too much, give him a pass on a lot of things, and I don't think he networked for it. It just happened to be that way. And some, you're right, some network and have contacts in the media with the pundits and all of that, and that helps them. Others don't even need to do it.
So he's networked himself into the Gab and Jules show.
That's it. You know he's a great networker if it becomes the Jules and Gab show. Okay, then you really know.
I know the right people.
When you sit on the left-hand side,
yes,
of the camera shot, Jules, and not the right-hand side.
I know. But you see, when Gab was away, he went to the left.
Oh, well,
he sat in the big boy chair. Yeah.
Does Gab know this?
I don't know. Gab will not be happy. His butt prints in the thing.
He sat there to see the clock for the time, because for the TV bit,
I'm not
going to
say who this was.
Your timings.
I'm not going to say who it was.
Uh-oh.
And
but I was at a club, and the manager was taking a few days off, and I walked past his office, and the coach was sitting in his chair with his feet on the desk.
Fantastic.
And I thought, there may be trouble.
Hey, Jules, you know when you sat in Gab's chair?
Oh.
Was it still warm?
I'd imagine he'd leave a rather warm. We hadn't been in for a couple of weeks.
Well.
The chair went, oh, you've lost weight.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of tonnage here.
Maybe not talk about warm seats, Stevie, considering your video that has got some interest.
The video?
Oh, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway. Disgusting nature. You can't fight nature at all.
Well, you can.
Disgusting.
Who had the bigger impact on English football when they arrived? Wenger, Mourinho or Guardiola? Stevie.
You've got to say Wenger,
haven't you? I'm crystal clear it was Arsene Wenger.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100%.
Right.
Aye.
Well, he came in as a... Why was this guy coming? Bruce Rioch left.
Yes.
They were struggling. I mean, they were really struggling. He comes in from Japan, and everybody's going... David Dean brought him in, and everybody's going, what the hell is this?
Yes.
And he transformed... Not only did he transform them into one of the best... They didn't win the European Cup or the Champions League, but they were one of the best teams in Europe. And they took on Man United head-to-head with some success, and Sir Alex Ferguson. And he transformed the culture at Arsenal, because it was a huge, like most places in those days, a huge unprofessional drinking culture.
Mm.
And he transformed the whole lot, everything. So
And he actually, you know, Fergie did it at United. He changed the culture.
Right.
But he changed the culture by getting rid of them.
Right.
He got players out the door who thought that was the norm. Wenger actually changed guys who thought that was the norm into becoming the preachers of the eating the right thing.
Sure.
And
do you think he would transform you?
If you can transform Tony Adam,
yeah,
you've got some talent.
Do you think he could get you?
Let's get Don
Hutch. No shepherd's pie.
What's a percentage? What's a Don Hutch percentage of the chances of him getting you to eat a healthy diet and not drink?
Yeah.
The chances are slim.
But he did. Unbelievable.
Jules, will the chaos around Rabiot in the Euros cost him a place in the next France World Cup squad?
It's a good question, Dan. We will know very soon. I think Deschamps announces the squad on the 26th of August for the next international break. So we'll see. I think he's not going to be there. And I think that will cost him a lot. Not so much him, but more his mum and her behaviour, really, her attitude. His as well, but hers didn't help either.
Remind me of this.
So remember, it was his mum that was having an argument with Paul Pogba's family and Mbappe's family in the stands.
Right.
And this all kicked off and this all became apparent afterwards after they lost the game against Switzerland and causing
trouble. It was Rabiot's family?
Rabiot's mother. Who's very, very close to, brought him up, obviously, and all kicked off.
And what else was Rabiot's role in this, Jules? Because you can't.
So his was more on the pitch. He had that disagreement and the altercation with Paul Pogba towards the end of the Switzerland game. And I think overall, maybe the attitude was not completely right. But Dan is right. The mum telling Mbappe's dad, go and saw your son because he's too arrogant and plays only for himself, didn't go down well within the whole squad and the whole, you know, families and Deschamps and people following.
We used to take our mums and dads or whatever to the games. All they were interested in was going in the lounge after
right.
for the free sandwiches and the drinks.
I can imagine. Would Craig get a Stevie haircut?
Yes,
If it meant Scotland reached the knockout rounds of the World Cup?
Not well, you'd have to bait me with something that is really going to interest me.
Surely.
I mean,
where are we going?
I've had a Stevie haircut, but not for about 10 years.
Okay.
Not quite sure. I thought about it a few times recently in the last couple of years, but I haven't seen what it did to that man.
You couldn't take a chance.
No.
It may not come back.
Whoa.
It may not come back.
But I saw the shape of yours when he first got it done. I went, mine's ain't got. No, I can't.
Dan, who do you think the goat is? I don't have the emoji on here. That's why. Oh, you didn't even put the emoji on that. Matthew Cameron. Thank you very much. Final question.
What does that mean?
Oh, because I read something out last week. I was asking Shaq if he liked chicken rooster curry. Because.
Oh, what did he do, laugh?
Because it was chicken rooster curry, because someone had put chicken and then an emoji of a chicken.
Chicken.
Right, I'm not.
He's not going to understand.
No, he's not even listening. He's just asking. Right, good final question here. Gab hates well-done steak. Stevie hates sweet corn and his shepherd's pie. Don hates melted cheese. What food do Craig and Jules particularly dislike?
I hate well-done steaks as well.
Right.
It's a disgrace.
Oh, cold. Culture vulture. Hey.
Well done, steak.
We were talking because there's a really nice steakhouse where we live, isn't there? And Stevie was thinking of going there.
Well, and then we told him the price.
It would be $50 for the steak before anything. And you're going to go in there and get it burnt.
Yeah.
What are you looking at me for?
Well, it's just what a complete waste of money.
Well, in your eyes, it's a complete waste of money.
Right.
In my eyes, it wouldn't be a complete waste of money.
Your man's a connoisseur. Leave him. If he wants to go there and get all the taste taken out of it, that's fine.
What a snob. So because something gets well done, you think that's, that's
below you. But you may as well just get a 15-buck steak from somewhere else.
Yeah. That's not true at all.
Really?
You like it chewy.
Because I like something and you think it's not right.
I'm just trying to help
then
you.
You get all uppity.
I'm just trying to help you save money, that's all. I thought you'd like that.
Oh, I can help myself. I won't be going, don't worry. $50 to burn the life out of a steak. No chance.
Exactly, burn the life out of it.
Pickles. I hate pickles.
I like most things. I'll tell you the only thing, and I really like. It's weird because I like jalapenos and all this, but I hate. For some reason, I cannot eat olives.
Really?
Yeah. I love jalapenos and all spicy stuff, but I can't have.
No.
It's one of the few things that I can't have are olives.
Right.
Who was it ordered the mussels when we went out with everybody?
Well, mussels are great.
No, it's oysters we had.
Oysters.
Oysters, delicious, Stevie.
I couldn't.
What a surprise.
Oh. Well, what did I tell you? The curry and you were sick.
Oh. Yeah. It wasn't the curry.
It was definitely the curry. Jules, what do you hate?
Oysters, I'm sorry, that doesn't do it for me at all. Olives, I'm with Craig on that one. James, and then maybe the most controversial is all those sauce that you put with your roast dinners and lunches. Mint sauce? No, you can't have mint sauce with your meat. This is just not
lamb.
Possible.
Mint sauce and lamb.
Mint sauce
not
and
possible.
Lamb.
Oh.
No.
It's weird though, because what's tapenade?
No, no possible.
Tapenade.
Right.
I couldn't even ask you. What's tapenade?
I don't know what tapenade is.
No idea.
Tapenade is crushed olives. You know, like black, you
yes.
see the black tapenade,
yes,
you
yeah,
get
yeah,
a little
yeah.
bit of
yes.
I can take that.
Right, but when it's got...
When it's a full olive,
no.
I'll almost throw.
And Jules, do I remember rightly, you don't like, if you go for a curry, you go korma, you don't like spicy.
Yeah, no spice wow. for me either. So korma is fine.
No, it's not.
You know, korma is
might
fine.
As well put you might as well put a vanilla yogurt on. Just get a vanilla yogurt and put it on. Get me a chicken Jalfrezi.
Trust me.
You want to get yourself on that Gordon Ramsay or something?
Why?
Well, because you seem to know everything about food and this and that.
Well, that's because I have more than three choices.
Oh, connoisseur there, going
I have more than three choices. Mince.
Well done, steak on my bird.
Well done, steak. Oh, what we'll get? Oh, mince.
Oh, man. That is it. Thank you very much.
Shepherd's pie.
We'll be back tomorrow. Spag bowl. Eleanor's
oh, spag bowl.
Eleanor's spag bowl.
Oh, that's four choices.
Yeah. There we go. We'll be back tomorrow. Back tomorrow, Craig?
Wednesday.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Enjoy your day off.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.